From crawl spaces to vaulted attics, he's seen it all, and he's giving you his advice free of charge. It's a beautiful thing. Now, back to Rosie on the House.
Welcome back, y'all. As we continue our conversation with my new neighbor who built my perfect home, he just hasn't asked me to move in with him yet. All right, Jerry, y'all live in rural Utah. You go through a process of identifying your next move to an urban livable urban environment with a good international airport. Phoenix meets that criteria. You know no one in this city. How do you pick your lot? How do you pick your architect? And how do you pick your builder?
Well, what we did, it was a two-step process. We came down here and we bought a small place, and we came to spend a little bit of time. So we'd be down here for a few months and or a few weeks and go back. We checked out, first of all, the heat in the summer and spent the summer here, or part of a summer, a little bit of a summer, and said, the heat's no problem.
Okay.
We can live with this.
All right.
So we had a base of operations. And then defining a lot was just serendipity. I was driving down the street. I knew where I wanted to live. And I was driving back from somewhere and drove down the street, and somebody was putting a for sale sign in front of an empty lot with houses built all around it. So I got in touch and bought the lot.
Okay.
I did because of my background, I did a phase one environmental study.
Okay.
Because
right.
I said, why hasn't a house been built here?
Interesting.
Was there something spilled here once 20, 30 years ago? And no, it was a clean lot. It was just one of those things where somebody owned it and decided not to build a house and sold it to somebody else, and they never got around to getting it built. So we had a lot. But then that was almost the easy part, was finding the architect and the contractor. With the architect, I knew that I liked sort of a Frank Lloyd Wright style home. And mm-hmm. I know there's Taliesin here. So I knew, secondly, that I wanted a small operation. It could be a one-man show, or it could be a five- or six-person show. But what I didn't want was a very large architectural firm that would put four or five people on the project. I wanted to deal with the head person, and I wanted that person to do the design. So I went on the internet. I looked up about half a dozen, and I went out and interviewed four different architects.
Okay.
And I asked them a series of questions. And the obvious things, but for example, I wanted to see their other work.
Sure.
And I wanted to talk to their other clients. I wanted to know who did what their experience was, where they were trained, and I wanted to know how they build, and I wanted to know if they did their own computer work or if they got college students to do it for them.
Okay.
And I found a guy when first time I interviewed him. I knew this was going to be the guy, but I went on and did interviewed others as well.
Finished your due diligence.
I finished that. This guy fit all the bill. And okay. He was, bills himself as the organic architect, Mike Rust.
And I'd never met him until we had dinner at your house and stuff. But boy, I could tell from just the way the house went up that I liked this guy before I ever met him.
One of the things that's important I found, and one of the questions, and it takes a series of questions, and they really don't know what you're asking them, but you're asking the architect, will you come forward with your ideas? And if I reject the idea, will you accept my rejection and continue to come forward with ideas in the future? I don't want to turn them off so they never come back with good ideas, but I don't want them to fight me and tell me they want to build it their way, not my way. And I've had architects do that to me both.
No, I can't imagine that.
Both ways, I've had it happen. And it takes a lot of conversation. But I saw with Mike that he was a guy, and he turned out to be a guy who had a lot of creative ideas. But if you told him they weren't something that appealed to you, that idea was off the table, and he'd come with something else.
Very good.
This worked well.
So that's a great process. And I want to get to picking the contractor and some of the other things you picked too. But I'm gonna interrupt the conversation just to reach out to a caller that's been very patiently waiting for us to take his call. Let's take Terry. It's what we're here for, to run a question and answer home improvement show. Terry, go ahead, ask your question. Let's see if we can help you out.
Okay, I think they're pretty simple. I've got a house that's about 30 years old. 25 to 30, I'm not exactly sure.
Okay.
But I'm pretty sure it's the original asphalt shingle job.
Okay.
And it's not that they're falling apart, that the asphalt's coming off. It's that the adhesive isn't sticking.
Okay.
So when we get a wind, it'll tear one off and, blow into the yard.
Yeah.
Here and there.
Okay.
So what I've been doing is nailing it back, finding it, going up there, piecing it together and nailing it back.
Okay.
But I need to re-roof the house. I understand that.
Okay.
My question is, is it better to rip everything off and re-shingle, like in an original process, or why can't I just shingle over the original shingles?
Okay, Terry, according to code, with asphalt three-tab shingles, you can do a second layer right over the top. But I'd have one of the Rosie Certified Roofers come out and give you a free consultation as to whether or not the base roof is still in good enough shape to cover it up. They'll do that for free. Tell them you talked to Rosie on the radio, and he told you they do it for free.
The number one referral directory in the state by voting at RosieOnTheHouse.com or ranking Arizona.